You're listening to Opacity, a podcast about working in design.
Hey, Craig, how's it going?
Hey, Tom. How's it going? It's been a while.
We've
took the summer, took a quiet summer. How was your summer?
As good as it could be in times like these, I suppose.
These unprecedented trying times.
It's been a few months since our last podcast, wasn't it? So a lot has been going on in the world.
Yep. But we're still here. We're still kicking.
How do you find the whole scenario of like being working from home now after being doing it for a number of months?
It's going okay. You know, since last time we talked, I've been able to set up a bit of a space to work. So I have a desk at home, which is, you know, I've moved from the bedroom to the kitchen table and now to my own desk, which is a surprisingly amazing upgrade. I didn't expect it to be that nice to have your own space. Well, my own space. I'm still in the living room, but to have your own desk, your own workspace.
It's your living room.
I take it over. Yeah. So it's going okay. I mean, there's still obviously like we're still balancing a lot of stuff, but it's going okay. Can't imagine, you know, how life was before we worked from home all the time. You know, it's hard to imagine. We used to commute like animals.
It is. It's just everything has changed so different. And I know, like, even people I work with, some people have adapted better than others. Mm-hmm. Everyone's managed, like, you know, but I think some people have enjoyed it more than others. To me, it's actually been, like, luckily, I'm very fortunate that it's been a pretty good, it's kind of suits me, basically, you mm-hmm. know. And we have a kind of a smallish utility box room type thing that I'm able to use, kind of my wife and I share, depending on when we're doing kind of work-related stuff. So, it's actually been all right for me. And as you're saying, it feels kind of weird now, the idea of commuting.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're in Ireland now. The kids have gone back to school recently. So I'm kind of, at least that's on the cycle. I cycle to school with my daughter in the morning. So that's kind of like some sense of normality. Because there was a while there where I was like, you know, not leaving the house very much. Mm-hmm. And a little bit too comfortable with that for my own good. Yeah, like, yeah. I think.
So, do you think you were...
get back to an exercise.
Like, were you into remote working before? Like, did you work from home at all? Or was this kind of all new for you?
Yeah, from time to time. I think probably like a lot of people are in the you know, tech industry. From time to time, I'd work from home. And I wasn't sure about it. I actually kind of like, it's one something I always kind of mulled around in my head. How would I actually feel about doing it for a longer period of time? I didn't know if I'd like it or not. So, more and more companies at the time, you know, there were more companies that were kind of going more all remote. That's like a year ago or more. So I was kind of curious about it. So it's been, if nothing else, it's been an experiment that's kind of like, you know, or to even scratch that itch of like, what would it be like to be working from home all the mm-hmm. time?
Yeah. No, I was always kind of, I had the sort of narrative in my head about working from home. It's just not for me. I'm just not like cut out for it. I can't, like, it's good on occasion. It's sort of like nice to have like a bit of like solitude to just kind of focus on some work and get through it. But like, yeah, at a day at a time, sure. But like, I would never be a person who could like do that all the time. So it's been a good kind of push to like, to really try it. And you know, obviously it's not like, it's different for different people, obviously, like, and it's also different depending on the time of the day. Like now, because kids here are in school, like we have this window of time, this like golden period of time where it's like silence. And then like in the afternoon they come back, and then like, you know, it's kind of back to how it was before. But so we all kind of manage that. But yeah, I didn't think I would be into it. But yeah, now I can't really see going back. I mean, I'm sure if things all do go back to normal, like we'll just readjust and get back into it. I'm enjoying it.
That's good. Yeah. I think I probably was the same. And I get your take on the window of silence there for a couple of hours, or a few hours at least. Yeah. It's almost too good to waste it on work. That's a joke. No. I suppose one benefit that I have found from it is like the type of work, you know, design related stuff and deep thinking. It's not when you're in an office, it's quite hard to get time to do that. Mm. You know, I think there have been some kind of cultural changes in our work and stuff with regard to time and, you know, not scheduling meetings at certain times and that kind of thing, and giving people space to be makers mm-hmm. as opposed to just the manager schedule of, you know, half of 30 minute blocks. Throughout the day.
Yep.
So I found that has been, while I do miss seeing my coworkers and stuff and having chats with them, coffee and stuff, I do find it's much easier for me to get into flow and to get back into flow. So like, I can get into it, I can get stuff done, I can get totally focused because there's no distractions apart from any apart from the ones that I make for myself, like really. And then if you jump onto a call, if you have to jump in a meeting and you get back to it, then you're kind of back where you were. There's no kind of like, even in the past in work, you're leaving a room, you've got to now go from that office or from that meeting room to back to your desk or whatever, to start doing work. Whereas I'm just here and I'm ready to go. So I think there's been a benefit of that for me anyway.
Yeah, I think it's all, they're all kind of like, even hearing you talk and thinking about my own experience, like these are all kind of double-edged swords, I feel like. Like there's the benefits of them. Like I 100% agree. Like for us, so we have an office in Dublin and then an office in San Francisco. So for us in Dublin, our mornings are like our kind of like time where people just can really focus. Like there's not really many meetings scheduled. It's really kind of a blessing to have like that period of time to just like to focus on what you need to get done for the day. And then the afternoons become like the back-to-back meetings for us. And then for them, it's their mornings, their early mornings. They wake up early for us. But then on the meeting side, like you're in the office, you'd work on the screen, you'd be staring at the screen, and then you'd maybe get up, make a coffee, you'd get up and go to a meeting. But now it's like, yeah, like you said, you're still here. You just look at the same screen all day. I find, and then like, because your computer's here at night, sometimes you'll kind of roll in at night, maybe even
No.
if it's not work, even if it's just like, oh, let me deal with some personal stuff, but it's always on the computer. So it's like I'm literally staring at the screen from the time I start work until like almost like the time I go to bed. And like there's very few breaks, so you gotta build those breaks in, I guess. But I struggle with building those breaks in because so much of the life is in the computer.
That's a really good point. And that like I felt that even for like for the last few years really of like just the amount of time looking at screens. You look at your phone so much throughout the day, you're on a laptop all day. And then when you're commuting, well, I used to cycle. If it wasn't cycling, you'd be looking at your phone, scrolling on your phone, you're getting home, spend some time doing dinner, and then looking at more screens, probably looking at your phone again, and then maybe putting on some TV, just like looking at screens constantly. I've really tried to curb that, but even things like playing guitar. If I play guitar, I record with the laptop, so the laptop's in front of me as well. So, and things like that. Or if I want to draw, I've been trying to do more things analog as opposed to. Although the lure of like Procreate on the iPad keeps pulling me back to that, which is like another screen. You're staring at another screen. You're not blinking as much as you normally do, and getting your brain doesn't know what's going on.
I wonder, in this whole experience, like in this journey of self-discovery, as we get into our topic of the day, kind of are there things that you've learned about yourself from this experience, or like things you've become more aware of in your own, the things you're good at, the things you're not good at, like all of that kind of stuff.
I did. I have been thinking about it a bit more. Obviously, like you've got a lot more time to be in your head over the last months, after the last number of months, whether that's a good or bad thing. So, hasn't all been like, let's be honest, it's a very difficult time for a lot of people. Like, so it's not all, oh, we're sitting at home, we're doing all the things we want to do. It's been kind of stressful at times. So, it has made me think a bit more, like even just doing stuff like professional development related things in work. Like I'm very fortunate that we get a budget to do some of that. And, in the past, maybe you would have used that as a at a conference or something like that. So, which is not possible. Well, I know there are virtual conferences, but they don't really appeal to me that much sitting in front of a laptop again, so.
Oh, well.
But it made me do. It did make me think around like what are the things I want to work on, like so I decided to spend most of the budget on like books. But then like what kind of books? Like what am I wanting to do? I think naturally I kind of I'm drawn to like hard skills as a person. Like I like being able to do things. So I like being able to, obviously my background from an educational perspective is like VizCom, visual communications slash graphic design. So I think people who do those types of courses are naturally kind of drawn to execution of things, and being able to do things, whether it's like, they're probably more likely to be interested in illustration or 3D than maybe other people who just did computer science. So I think I do find that's kind of me. Like I'm like, how do I add this new skill? Because I get a real buzz from, like, if I've done a lot of illustration over the years, but if there's a type of illustration that I haven't done before and I can do a course on that, I get excited about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or even I start learning some 3D stuff with Blender, which is quite fun. But most of the stuff that I spent the budget on the books was more kind of like just like thinking about design and that kind of thing.
Mm.
The softer skills, which was kind of like not my, it's not the impulse I would normally have. I'd be like, oh yeah, okay, I'm gonna do the course on, I'm gonna level up on Blender, I'm gonna level up on this thing, I'm gonna level up on that thing, you know, hard
mm-hmm.
skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about yourself?
Well, on that topic of hard and soft, it's interesting, you know, thinking about our, you know, probably most people listening to this are working remotely in some capacity, if not fully. It's funny, you know, talking about hard and soft skills, you know, I feel like one of the downsides of this scenario is that like hard skills are what's seen, like in terms of how your coworkers maybe perceive you and your contribution to the organization you work within. Like, it seems like because it's all like these outputs that, you know, what engineers are producing, what code or what designers are producing, what screens are, like, all these kind of outputs that are coming in, it's almost like that's like a primary judge of someone's value. Or maybe I'm overstating it, but I think there's some kind of been some talk on this kind of the challenge of remote work, and that, you know, a manager sees much less of the sort of whole human being you are with all of those soft skills that you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the I don't want to say judgment, but I guess the perception of your value is sort of maybe more leaning toward hard skills. And maybe it always is, but I think it's just emphasized by this remote work scenario, where, like, you know, how much of a team player you are, how you interact with coworkers in your team or outside of your team or in teams that are unrelated to you, like all of those kind of things that create a coherent and good kind of working culture sort of dissipate. Like, you can try to do it virtually, but they aren't really, like, they're all kind of, they feel a bit artificial, I think.
I'm more
like a soft skill kind of guy, just as a compensation of my lack of hard skills. No,
we're all different, like. but I think there's a balance needed in the line of work that we do. I'll just, if I only focused on hard skills, then I'd be and I had no soft skills at all, or professional skills, as I've heard people call them, which I think is a better term, because it actually, the word soft makes them sound like they're not essential or whatever. So they are kind of essential professional skills. But like, if you don't have them, if you're really good at executing things, but you can't deal with other people, or you can't, you know, if your kind of workflow is like taking something, going off, hiding away, and come back with the answer, and then, you know, expecting people to go, oh, we love it, you know, nobody wants to work with someone like that, you know. So I think it's the balance of, you know, what you want to do, how you want to grow as well.
Yeah. But yeah. And I also think the whole, like, you know, the journey is so important. It's not only about the destination, and, you know, to produce good design work, like, a lot goes into it. It's not just about, you know, executing a sort of a clean interface. Like, there's all the sort of things that go into that, from conception to final production. And like, you know, the hard skill, like, there's hard skills that contribute probably throughout that process, but maybe they get more clear, more salient, is that an appropriate word?
Sure.
At the end of the process, whereas like those soft, or you said professional skills, could maybe like serve earlier in the state, like earlier in the process a bit better, like in terms of collaborating with people and making sure like voices are heard and perspectives are surfaced and all of those kind of good things. But yeah, I feel concerned sometimes that those things get put to the side in this environment we have. So to bring it back maybe to where you started, where like you were thinking of what skills to gain, like, I wonder if the soft skills that are most important in this remote work environment are different than they were in person. Maybe they're not, but just as a question out for the universe, are they different?
You know? I think that's a great point. And don't get me wrong, like, I totally know the importance of, like, most of the work that we do is not outputs. It is all the interaction with humans. It is all with humans. I make it sound like we're robots. But it's working with people, you know, you know, defining problems and stuff like that, and the execution comes at the end. So don't get me wrong, I know I totally I wouldn't change that process at all. But when it does come to like upskilling, or that my gravitate towards kind of hard skill related things for some reason. But I think that's a great point you're making around, like, I have noticed that in even the kind of like the body language issue of, you know, in a room, you can kind of see when someone looks like they're priming themselves to ask a question. It's harder to see that over Zoom or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people, you know, there are different types of people. Like, so you have, like, I'll talk all day. I have no problem talking. And, you know, if I'm in meetings or workshops that I'm asked to be in, I'll have plenty to say. So I've heard
that about you, Sam.
But I've started to try and kind of hold back a little bit, you know, to let other people, not that I would dominate the conversation, but if you're in a room with people, you can see, you can kind of like, there's natural body language that we're evolved to recognize that you don't really see on, or you don't get that over Zoom. So yeah. I've tried to make a conscious effort now of like holding back a little bit and just allowing more awkward silences for people who might be holding back to say things.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, God,
I've probably painted a picture of me just like talking the whole time, and here I am doing it.
You're just steamrolling the conversation as you do, Tom. That's an interesting, like, this whole Zoom. Yeah, just how do we interact? Like, there's so much awkwardness and so much. I mean, even with people you work together with all the time and like you're very comfortable with, and then, you know, someone will be talking, everybody will be on mute, they're sort of presenting, talking about an idea or whatever, and then, what does everybody think about that? And then it's just like silence. Everybody's just staring at the screen. Like, you know, maybe someone will put a little clap emoji or something, or a thumbs up emoji. Like, it's such a weird interaction. Yeah, it's very hard to, but like, what's the alternative? Like, everybody like nodding their heads in silence, or everybody turning on their mics to say, yep, at the same time. Like, there's no good way to do it. Yeah. So it's like, you just have to, it's like a totally new, just a new environment that you have to figure out how to traverse it. I'm using all kinds of big words today.
Nice.
Yeah. Salient, oh, traverse.
Think up another one. Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's a really good, really interesting thing. And I know certain people would get phased by that a bit more, you know, because it's kind of like, there's this kind of, I don't know, maybe understood way of how humans behave, that when they're, you know, back to if you're in person with someone and you're giving something, right? So if you're presenting or talking through something, like, there's an effort made on your part and people acknowledge it with body language. Do you know, like, even with like subtle, like, micro expressions of like, you know, oh, I look like I'm agreeing with you, or, you know, we can pick up on those little nuanced things. But as you're saying, if nobody kind of like is acknowledging that, or they're on mute, or even they have their camera turned off, whatever, because it can be quite taxing to have your camera on, your video on all day.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, right, complete silence. So, you know, or even if you're cracking a joke and like there's people laughing, you've got a good idea someone's laughing, maybe, or if you're on a call and someone says something funny and you kind of laugh to yourself, but you're on mute and they can't hear anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just this weird kind of.
Yeah, I gave a presentation recently and I tried to make it funny. I think it was entertaining. But yeah, like I presented it to the group and like I had no idea if it was well received or not. Like, I think I heard one laugh because there was someone was off mute, but that was it. Like, you have no idea, so you just kind of do the best you can. Yeah, it's
like
kind of
mute just to go ha ha
ha ha ha. So you just have to like look at everybody, like, do that. And someone else I work with was telling me like that someone was giving a presentation and they were watching people's reactions just to see how people were kind of taking it. So it's like, you know, so it's almost like even now, like I noticed as you were talking, I was like emphasizing how much I was shaking my head to like be very clear, like, yes, I agree with that, Tom.
It's like when you're doing your driving test and you kind of like, you know, overextend your head to make sure that they know you're observing everything, you know, like,
exactly.
Like, I'm definitely looking left and right here.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a nice segue. So I wanted to get into the whole self-awareness thing. And it's like maybe in this scenario, like, there's a need to be hyper self-aware. Like, there's always a need to be self-aware. It's always an important, I think, professional skill to have or to think about. But like maybe now it's like even more, like, you not only have to be more forgiving about how other people you think other people perceive you, but then you also have to be like emphasize to people, like overly communicate how you perceive others, maybe, like, you know, how I perceive your what you just said, like I'm going to make a bigger head nod just to make sure you know I'm on the same wavelength as you.
I appreciate it, thank you.
Yeah, it'd make you feel good. So, but yeah, like self-awareness is an interesting one. I feel like there's this conundrum of self-awareness, just in general, not remote work. I was thinking about this lot, like in the past few years quite a bit. It was kind of all came to a head when a boss of mine told me that I was not self-aware. Like his feedback to me was that I didn't seem very self-aware, which I like was really kind of taken aback because I perceived that person to be one of the least self-aware people I've ever met, which like it all made me think.
Maybe he doesn't understand what self-awareness means.
Well, no, it put me in this spiral of thinking of like, well, maybe I'm not self-aware, even though I thought I was pretty good. Like I'm not great, but I thought I was okay. Like I at least take the time to ask the question, am I, like how am I being perceived or whatever. But it made me think, okay, the non-self-aware person has no, like, it's not in their mind that they're not, like, they think they're aware of things around them and how people perceive them and all of that. But because they're not self-aware, they can't actually be aware of the fact that they're not self-aware. Like, it's this it's this snake eating his tail kind of a thing where you can't get out of it. So then I was like, oh, well, maybe that's me. Like, maybe I'm the one who thinks I'm self-aware, but actually I'm not. And, like, it just made me kind of... It put me into a little mini crisis of like, well, what is the meaning of life?
What happened? Like, what did you do about that? Or did you like ask more clarity? Like, what did he?
No,
what happened from that?
No, I don't know. I don't remember what happened, but I think my memory stopped at that point. I was really taken aback by the comment because it sort of shook like what I thought about myself. My own self-awareness was shook. Or self-perception was shook by it, but it made me kind of look into like, see, okay, how do people, like, how do you actually ask the question in order to increase your own self-awareness? Like, you know, because you can't just rely on people's feedback because people will hold back feedback all the time, especially now, like bring back to the remote thing, especially now, like it's awkward enough to have awkward conversations and then put awkward conversation in this weird format of being on a video call, like it's even weirder. So how do you actually solicit, you know, feedback about stuff? And especially like if you're a manager, how do you solicit feedback from someone who's on your team? Basically just like, what are the questions you need to ask in order to start, just to make that door be open and to always kind of be thinking about your own development as you become a better human being?
That is interesting. That is a peculiar thing to say for someone. Like I can imagine, well, it's not a peculiar thing to say, but it would be something that would get you in your head if someone said that to you.
Yeah,
you're not self-aware. I don't think I've ever had that one. What do you do with that, you know?
Yeah.
Therapy.
I think it was the person who said it, also the fact that I thought that person was completely blind to the world around that person. So like it just made it ever more, you know, more kind of just confusing to me.
That is interesting, because with feedback from someone, because it basically it sounds like it undermines that feedback, because if someone is saying to you, you know, that I don't think you're self-aware, and you would consider them to be someone who's not very good self-awareness, well, that's kind of like, that undermines that kind of feedback then, really, isn't it? You know, do you go to ask other people then? Like people that you would trust? Because there's an erosion of trust in what they've said then, you know? I'm trying to think of another example, but I don't know. It's kind of like maybe, it's like someone saying like, oh, well, your shirt is dirty.
Yeah.
But they've got mustard stains all over theirs, you know.
Yeah, but they can't see it. Like they can't see the fact that their shirt's dirty, but you think you see it, but then you start questioning, wait, like what if mine's dirty? What if my perception of dirt is wrong? Like that's kind of where my head went. It's like, well, maybe their shirt is actually clean. Maybe that's just like the design of their shirt that it has this big ketchup stain. Maybe that's just supposed to be there, you know. Anyway, I think it's an interesting thing. It brought me to this thing. Have you heard of the Johari window? It's like a sort of a workshop tool kind of a thing, or I don't even know how to describe it, but it's basically this thing where you ask questions of how people, I'm gonna butcher it now, but you can look it up, Johari window. It's like you put sort of people's feedback in these boxes, these sort of quadrants of like, I think what What do they think are your strengths? Or what do they think are your weaknesses? And then what do you think are your strengths? And what do you think are your weaknesses? And then you sort of see the results. They sort of put together this overlap of like, okay, this is what Tom thinks I'm good at, and this is what I think I'm good at. And this is what Tom thinks I'm bad at, and I think I'm good at. This is what Tom thinks I'm good at, and I think I'm bad at. So it sort of like helps you see further, like, oh, like, no, you, the things you think you're bad at, people actually think you're really, really good at. It's like, so I think I'm a bad communicator. Tom thinks I'm a good communicator. Oh, that like changes my perception of who I am. Whereas I think I think I'm really like, you know, charismatic, but Tom thinks I'm chauvinistic or whatever. Like, oh, like maybe my charisma is actually like not well received. So that's a good, I wanted to make a tool to actually do this, you know, run this window. Never got to it.
So one doesn't exist. It's already, it's an established kind of approach, but nothing exists. It's
kind of a tool. Like, it'd be really nice. Like, if anybody wants to work on it, you know, go do it or let me know. I'd love to help to join it. But,
that's cool. Yeah, but I think I haven't done that. I haven't heard that name before, but I have done like kind of, team critiquing type of exercises before in previous roles, where one of the exercises that the person we went to with an expert in this kind of area, and they were like working with teams, getting them to be more efficient, getting them to highlight some of their weaknesses and that kind of thing, and then you kind of give each other feedback, you write it down. It's similar but not exactly the same thing, I don't think, or maybe this is the same thing, I don't know. But anyway, the way that this person would communicate it was like, this is like a green tail experiment, right? Or exercise. So if I tell you, Craig, you've got a green tail, you're going to go, yeah, well, I obviously don't. But if three other people say to you, Craig, you've got a green tail, you might want to look behind and see if you've got a green tail there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing, as in saying, like, you know, if I said to you, Craig, you know, you've no self-awareness, you might go, well, Tom is not a very self-aware person. So why would I believe what he says? But if three other people said the same thing, then you're like, well, maybe I need to look at this. So and it was a way of just kind of like getting feedback. Like, some people take feedback differently, right? So like, I know some people like it, and it's a balancing act. It's a very delicate thing to do. Like, how do you give someone constructive feedback, because you don't want to crush them? Depending on the person, they can take even a small thing, like that self-awareness thing. If you said this, depending on who took that piece of feedback, they could be crushed, do you know? That could like just like consume their life. I'm like, what am I not self-aware about? Is it just work? Is it home, you know? My relationship, am I just a terrible person? And then spiral. So it's a funny one with feedback. It's a very delicate balance on how you communicate what you want to say or what needs to be said, in a way, but in a way that is constructive as well, and doesn't hurt the person, you know, unnecessarily.
I mean, I'm a big supporter of candor, you know, in feedback, but like, there's all, like, you have to be aware that like pieces of feedback can stick with people. Like, maybe I just hold on to things, but like, I think that comment, I probably remember that for most of my life, like in one it was like literally one probably 10-minute conversation. It's gonna stick with me just because it really kind of it hit home. So I think like something to think about, you know, when you are giving feedback, to be a bit compassionate with the person you're talking to, and realize, you know, this could shake them up a bit. Maybe like a shake up can be a good thing. It could shake them, you know, out of a rut that they're in, and help them become something better than they would have been able to become if they hadn't been aware of that. But it could also like, I guess you have a responsibility as a feedbacker, you know, to make sure your feedback is good and true.
Yeah.
Coming from a good place. Yeah. Yeah.
Let it go. I think you're a very self-aware person, Craig. Let it go. This helps.
Thanks. Okay, good. I'll throw away that piece of advice. I am self-aware.
Well, that, like, maybe a piece of advice in for that kind of thing is, if someone says that to you, if someone says something that you disagree with, or, you know, that catches you off guard like that in the future, this isn't just to you. I'm kind of saying this to myself, I suppose, as well, I suppose. But maybe to sense check it with other people. Do you know, like, so talk to someone you trust and say, listen, Yeah, am I wrong here, or like, am I missing something here? Is it, am I, do I come across as being self-aware, or not having good self-awareness?
I think that's probably a critical piece of this, of self-awareness, is like, you know, okay, let's say I work with you, Tom. You think you're really good at UI stuff, like you've got, you know, all about drop
yeah, it's not
shadows
just UI
and
stuff that I do, but yeah, okay,
just stuff. You're good at like UI stuff. So, you know, and one day I'm in a session with you, and I was like, you know, Tom, you really got to work on your corner radius. Like, I really think it's a bit sloppy. Like, you really, you're whatever. You just didn't really consider it here. I think you should probably go take like some fundamental. I heard like some UX training has some UI course. You should probably go take that just to brush up on your skills. Because, you know, if you want to advance in your career, you're gonna really have to take this seriously. You can't just get by, you know, talking about experiences and stuff. You really gotta, you have to have some hard skills. And you'll go back and be like, have a crisis, and you don't know what to do, because, you know, this person, this guy Craig, who's you really respect, gave you this piece of feedback that sort of, you know, questioned who you are as a human being. But then you go and ask somebody, and then that's the critical point. You say,
yeah,
Craig said this to me, like, what do you think about my corner radiuses? Are they like okay? Like, are they consistent, you know? And then they say no, they're great. But then somebody says they're great, but you have to keep asking, you have to keep going, because, like, you know, the one person, maybe they're just, they don't want to hurt your feelings, like, everybody knows this, but we don't want to tell Tom, you know. Yeah. So, but like, the fact that you ask means that you are seeking to be more self-aware, and not, yeah, not giving up too early.
I think it's good, it's also good to recognize people who give you direct and honest feedback as well, to know, mm-hmm, like. And I suppose it's so there's kind of like, it's a weird dynamic in that ask, if you come to someone, because like the person who's being asked that question, if you ask me, it's almost like you're kind of asking someone to almost hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Yeah.
So like there's a pressure on that person then to go, oh, how do I word this now? Like, if I do think they have work to be done, how do I word it? It's really hard, like, you know, and then it puts a lot of pressure on, and words are, the thing about words is, like, they're tricky, and I always, when someone says something, and I always try and figure out what's the intent of the words that they're using, like, so, you know, you can fumble words and use the wrong word, and then you can jump down someone's throat for using a certain word or whatever, or phrasing something a certain way, but what was the intent of it? Like, did they mean to that? Did they just bumble that word and kind of, you know, or I suppose if you're giving feedback, you can kind of like, you can say, well, you know, you can qualify it a bit, like, oh, that might sound harsh, I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was, maybe you could do X, Y, or Z, or think about X, Y, or Z.
Yep, words are real.
Words are real.
Words be
and
tricky.
Words do hurt. Words be tricky, yeah. And they do hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially more with the written form than with verbal
oh,
delivery.
Oh, fuck yeah. No, that the written, you know, like how words are received via Slack or like what used to be email or versus now talking on Zoom versus talking in person, like it's just like every channel becomes a new layer of, I guess, as the more you get to written and less like visual, whatever, the more things are misunderstood or miscommunicated. Or, you know, if you put an exclamation point at the end of a sentence, like, what does that really mean? If you put an emoji that you think means something and they think means something else, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, if you just ask a really short question at a random time, what does that mean? Like, if, you know, like, there's so much, like, there must be a word for this, like, the underlying kind of message that's being conveyed.
Humans are complicated.
The world's crazy.
Humans are complicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, I think technology is not helping in certain ways. Whereas if you're in a room with someone, you can kind of, as we were back to that point, if I'm in a room and I'm giving it to you face to face, you can see my body language. If I'm expressing, you know, we pick up a lot of things and how I'm, these facial expressions I'm making as I'm saying something, you know, as people say, it's not what they said, it's the way they said it, you know, and that's not always like, the verbal delivery of it—it's—it's it's kind of like body language as well, yep. Because you can say something sarcastically, and it could sound a certain way, but the body language says something completely different. Welcome back, Craig.
Welcome back. We're back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle. Yeah, we're gonna try and be more regular with this now. So we're trying to figure out a time that's been the challenge over the last number of months of like just our schedules and
It's amazing it's amazing how hard finding a slot of time that worked for both of us is. Considering, like you said, we're in the same spot all day, but it presents new challenges.
All right, finish up,
Tom. Yeah, thanks so much. Good chat.
Good chat.